Welcome to No Room for Phonies, episode
101.
101.
Here we go.
So, during this round of episodes and things, we will probably still have some guests and things, but we're going to look at a lot of the books that I've read, you've read some, whatever.
Well, so, some of us are one of us is retired and yes. One of us is not.
So I wanted to look today at books by Adam Grant. I think he's, a lot of these guys got their start in, with TED Talks, right?
Yes, he was an athlete, a swimmer, mm-hmm. Wait, diver.
Diver, I
can't remember which.
Anyway.
And anyway, then he had a TED Talk and that launched. I mean, he had done his degree. He's an organizational psychologist. But the TED Talk is what launched him into being a public speaker. And got
his fame.
Yeah. Right? And then his books published.
So his most recent book, which we're going to talk about today, is called Hidden Potential. And it just says the true measure of your potential is not the height of the peak you've reached, but how far you climbed to get there.
Okay.
And then another of his books, Think Again, which
we've both read that,
one. Yeah. Intelligence is usually seen as the ability to think and learn, but in a rapidly changing world, there's another set of cognitive skills that might matter more, the ability to rethink and unlearn.
Yeah. It is a very good book about challenging your own mindsets that have been frozen and opinions that are kind of petrified and just a way of thinking things over again. Yeah.
His other book is called Originals. Great innovators procrastinate, you'll be happy to hear. They feel fear and doubt. They have bad ideas. What sets them apart is that they persist in championing their ideas anyway because they're less afraid of failing than of failing to try.
What's the title of that book?
Originals. And then his other book is Give and Take. Success.
That's our first book that we have read of his. Yeah.
Success is not about competition. It's about contribution. The most meaningful way to succeed is to help others succeed. Mm-hmm. And then Option B is another one of his books. Resilience is the strength and speed of our response to hardships, and it's a capacity we can all build. And then he has some children's books, which I didn't know.
Okay.
Leaf and the Fall. A leaf named Leaf, L-E-I-F, who's afraid to fall in the fall, learns that creativity and persistence can lead to amazing things. School Library Journal calls it a clever and triumphant tale, and Kirkus described it as a polished, clever take. Then the other one.
That'd be a good one to get to have in our children's library.
The Gift Inside the Box is another one. A gift box meets children who want him for themselves and keep searching for a giver. It's one of Amazon's 2019 holiday gift picks. This book is meant to be read interactively so that parents and teachers can start conversations with kids about generosity.
Wow, that one sounds timely for the season.
Then his other book is Power Moves. Yes, power can corrupt, but more often it reveals. Through interviews at the World Economic Forum in Davos with 24 CEOs, entrepreneurs, scientists, and thought leaders, explore how people are gaining, losing, and using power differently in a connected world.
Wow.
So those are his books.
Time for some politicians to read some of the book.
Yeah. So the book, though, today that I wanted to talk about is some of the, and I'm just giving some of the quotes from the book, and you can have your reactions to them from the book Hidden Potential. Mm-hmm. So the first quote I wrote down was, what any person in the world can learn, almost all persons can learn if provided with appropriate conditions of learning.
I really like that because it is about the context of learning, and it really does kind of highlight the disadvantage that a lot of people have. And they don't get to maximize their full potential. I'm just thinking of that one girl in that grade 6 class that you taught in the inner city school.
Right.
And how, you know, her family background, the culture that she was from, and then the context
she was
that...
Indian.
I don't remember the country.
I don't remember what country,
but,
actually.
But was English her second language? I think mm-hmm. so. but she was already quite fluent.
She was a brilliant girl.
Right.
Brilliant
but
girl.
But look at the school that she was plunked in mm-hmm. and the family in the neighborhood. And yet that year you were able to provide
a
lot of
things, opportunities. Because the conditions changed. I made sure she had the opportunities she needed. Mm-hmm. But also many years ago, it feels like now, there was a researcher named Carmel Crivola who said that all children can learn given the correct time, support, whatever.
Right, because sometimes it does take a little bit more time. But
like all children can learn mm-hmm. given that they are provided with what they need to learn. Right. It also doesn't say...
I mean, he doesn't say everyone. He says almost all because, I mean, you got to allow for different kinds of ability handicaps.
But the other thing is, like what Carmel Crivola said in her writing was like, all children can learn, not at the same rate and maybe not as much mm-hmm. as each other.
Right.
But all children can learn.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it's not really about saying that everybody's going to become a brilliant, you know,
lawyer or astrophysicist
or teacher or whatever. Right. It's that mm-hmm. all persons can learn. Mm-hmm. So I really love that quote.
Yeah.
And then
I have to say, we really do espouse that at Niagara College. Because of the variety of programs that we have.
Yeah.
And like
And the supports that are in place.
And, you know, and we do have programs for community members who, you know, will never become plumbers or electricians, but can work on an assembly line.
Yes, and, absolutely. You know, like and that. Opportunities. Mm-hmm. So differences in learning, natural ability are often differences in opportunity and motivation. You can't tell where people will and from where they, you can't tell where people will end up and from where they begin. What counts is how hard you work and how much you grow. I didn't say that very well. You can't tell where people will end up from where they begin.
No.
Because what counts is how hard you work and how much you grow as you go.
Mm-hmm. I do remember, I think I read at least in the prologue or early chapters in the book, he does mention that individuals who are racialized or from minorities or come from, you know, less economic situations, they do have to work harder than the privileged ones.
Yes.
The issue is that the privileged ones want to stay privileged and have some of those attitudes.
Right.
Of,
there's this experiment they do that, but, like, you know, step forward if your parents are not divorced, step forward if you are white, step forward. And the people are farther behind. Like, mm-hmm. they have to work harder and move hard, fat. Right. And like, I know how I grew up
in poverty
and where I was not encouraged to mm-hmm. like, and where your
father and his ilk were against women having an education.
Yeah. And where we are now as a couple compared to where our parents are and what we're able to do. Mm-hmm. So, and then this other one is about learning. Effective teachers help students develop cognitive skills. Predictors of school success based on being taught or encouraged to develop strategies in proactive pro-social discipline and determination. These are taught by great teachers. So it's not just about the cognitive skills. Mm-hmm. If you are a great teacher, you're helping your students, you know, in proactive pro-social discipline and determination.
So. I really found it fascinating that one of the main determiners for an individual being further ahead, both social economically and socially and well adjusted, was the kindergarten teacher.
Yeah,
teaching them pro-social skills.
Yeah,
it was really right down to the kindergarten teacher.
A few years ago,
and it was the more years of experience a kindergarten teacher mm-hmm. had, their students were more successful. It was one of the main determiners.
And you know, we talked a few years ago about self-regulation, and people didn't embrace that the way they should have. Mm-hmm. And like I see, you know, in our little people like Mason and Charlotte, and how much mom and dad work on self-regulation with them mm-hmm. and how that makes such a big difference for them in how they're able to manage themselves.
Yeah, it's a huge difference.
You know,
rather than just acknowledging feelings and letting the feelings go wild and go on and on and on and on, there's that, okay, we acknowledge them. And now let's work on getting them under control.
Yeah. And what's acceptable.
Which isn't popular these days.
No, it's not. Okay, so this quote says, character is more than having principles. It is the learned capacity to live by your principles. We need to understand and master ourselves.
Can you say the first part again?
Character is more than having principles.
Right, so, it's being able to live by your principles.
Yes, and to be able to have the self-control that we kind of talked about.
This
before.
Makes me laugh at our fundamentalist evangelical upbringing, where they had a lot of the principles, but not necessarily the character, because they weren't implementing them.
No.
Often. There was a lot of hypocrisy.
And I mean, later on, I want to talk about the book by Richard Rohr, Jesus's Alternative Plan.
Okay.
Because
that
he
one
talks
I'm
a
have
lot.
To read first.
He talks a lot about living by your principles and not just living by a whole bunch of rules.
Right.
Like, I believe that, you know, everybody should do this, or that this is wrong, or this is wrong. That's not character. Character is living out.
Yeah.
And becomes more than just, I have this principle and I won't listen to anybody else's, right? The other thing he talks about a lot in this book is scaffolding. So when you scaffold, the goal is to shift the responsibility to you so you can develop your own independent approach to learning. Temporary structures, or the scaffold, give the opportunity and motivation to learn. Scaffolding shows the way, and the achievement is in the growing, kind of away from needing the scaffolding.
Can you talk about a practical example?
Yes, I can. So, for example, kids who need support in reading, right, by... say having it read to them, or, you know, having picture clues, or having, you know, or really having to use phonics, like deeply to read every word. Though that's all scaffolding. And you can use that as long as you need it. But the goal is that it's temporary, and that eventually you can read through a whole book without having to sound out every single word.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a very basic... But I mean, you guys.
But there isn't anything wrong with scaffolding, let's say counting on fingers, and you still do it as an adult.
Yes. And, but you must think of ways that you scaffold for your English students
absolutely.
A lot,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes we see scaffolding as cheating, and I think that that's really unfortunate. And if you read his book, you'll really understand more about scaffolding and why it's so...
And it's not just in education. It's in anything that you want to achieve in life. So let's say for me, having to have a courageous conversation is to practice it with a colleague or with a mentor and role play it out a few times. And, you know, not just rehearse it in your mind, but... You know,
but actually to practice it,
and then it becomes easier.
So personality is your predisposition, your basic instincts for how you think and feel and act.
Right.
That's
personality.
And personality
is a mixture of genetics and upbringing and exposure.
Right. Yeah. But character is your capacity to prioritize your values over your instincts.
Okay.
So to choose not to give in.
Right. And so if I'm a procrastinator, a character is working hard on developing tools and strategies to avoid procrastinating.
Right. Yeah. And character is how you show up on a hard day.
Right.
So, and personality is not your destiny. It is your tendency.
Yeah. That's interesting because
I
know,
really
so many,
liked all that.
You know, horoscopes and other personality tests, things like that. They're very, try to be very predictive and frozen.
Yeah.
And well, and you know, I can't remember who the psychologist was about 40 years ago declared that the human brain can't, the adult brain cannot change.
And he,
and the modern current
disagrees with that.
Brain science is showing that that's not true.
So traveling great distances requires the courage to seek out the right kinds of discomfort, the capacity to absorb the right information, and the will to accept the right imperfections. Embrace the unbearable awkwardness of learning. So if you want to go somewhere, it's going to take courage.
Right. And you have to live through the awkwardness.
Yes.
And
I think that has to do with like even hard things in our lives. When we have to get through hard things in our lives, like we have to understand that it's going to feel awkward and terrible and it's going to take courage to get through it. But if we accept the right kind of imperfection and awkwardness, then we will travel great distances. And he says, you must be brave enough to use your knowledge as you acquire it. And he talks about that a lot when it comes to learning a second language.
I know I've read that chapter.
And I thought that was just fascinating because he basically says a lot of us don't want to speak the language until we're sure.
Yeah. But the research shows the students that take the most risks and are willing to just make mistakes, every single utterance they make in their new language are the ones that learn the fastest and become the most accurate.
And you know, we were having a discussion about, you know, like,
so next time we go to Portugal, you're speaking Portuguese.
Yeah. but no, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like I had a discussion with a friend about someone she knew that's, you know, doing Duolingo Spanish and then just going by herself to live in Spain.
Mm.
So she's going to
use her
knowledge as she acquires it.
Yeah. I also kind of thought of more mundane, simple little things. And of course, along the line of crafting, I've taught so many people to knit and crochet, and inevitably after the first half hour and they do something and there's a mistake, you know, out of 8 students, there'll be about 3 of them that are ready to cry and throw in the towel because they're not willing to live through that awkwardness and really struggle.
Yeah. Another thing that a definition that he gives is he calls shyness is the fear of negative evaluation in social situations.
Hmm.
So the reason that people are shy is because they're afraid that people are going to...
Interesting. But then little children, some of them are a little bit more hesitant to get to know adults and to reach out. But they're not even thinking about a negative evaluation at that young age, but then parents
fear, right?
But then parents encourage it by saying, "Oh, you're so shy."
I just thought it was interesting. And then he talks about learning a new language is about building a communication skill. Prosperity rises as people become more capable of absorbing new ideas and filtering out old ones.
Interesting. Is he talking literally prosperity as in financial?
Yes.
Wow.
And then absorption capacity is the ability to recognize, value, assimilate, and apply new information. And he builds that all in with prosperity, like being able to learn a new language, like all that, being capable of absorbing new ideas and filtering out old ones, that whole ability to recognize, value, and assimilate and apply new information is all to do with how you end up at the end of, you know. So when we think about what's on the curriculum in schools.
It's getting watered down.
Mm-hmm. And then this is one of my favorite things. I've talked about this a lot, but he says it directly in his book. Don't confuse nice and polite with kindness. Nice and polite is withholding feedback to make someone feel good today. Kindness is being candid about how they can get better tomorrow. A coach sees your potential and helps you become a better person. Teaching others builds our competence. Coaching others elevates our confidence.
Hmm. Interesting.
So if, you know, he's talking about that difference between just spouting out information and actually coaching someone to be a better person. By seeing that person's potential.
Right. But also going back to the whole nice and polite, where, you know, just to keep things, just to keep harmony, you avoid saying the things that might actually improve that person's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Making progress isn't always about moving forward. Sometimes it's about bouncing back, and resilience is a form of growth. And be stewards of the future and not custodians of the past.
Well, I'm even thinking of, you know, maybe there are people that never make it on the prosperity scale, but they still, for every setback, they become more resilient and more determined. And
but I liked that idea that making progress isn't always about, like sometimes you have things that set you back, but you are resilient, mm-hmm. you build resilience.
That's still growth and learning.
Yeah. And there's a whole chapter on Finland and schools in Finland.
Yeah, I haven't read that yet. I'm looking forward to that.
And
very much, so.
In Finland, the belief is in the potential of all students. And their saying is that we can't afford to waste a brain.
Wow.
So they invest in every student, regardless of their ability. Every child gets a personalized plan for growth. And education is seen as a plan for nation building.
Wow.
So when we think of the way schools are managed here,
Well, and we've said there's no vision set by the federals. There's no vision. No. There's very little vision set by the provinces.
And, the
and we're not working on nation building.
Well, and the thing is, like, you know, when you say, oh, nurses and doctors and whatever, they're essential services, and we don't include education in that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're not using it for nation building. And he says this statement, and I'm just, this statement hit me so hard because as a principal, I dealt with all these new initiatives that would be coming into schools. And he says
every
schools
year.
Don't need new initiatives. They need to find ways to give students a sense of agency at all levels. And so reading is the basic skill for all subjects. So instead of putting all these new initiatives in place,
mm-hmm.
give kids a sense of agency and make sure they can read well with whatever scaffolding they need,
mm-hmm.
because that's the basis for everything.
Interesting.
Reading and understanding,
reading,
right?
And understanding.
Like, you know, you just think of every job or everything that you go to do, you have to be able to read something and understand it.
Yeah.
You do. You have mm-hmm. to be.
It's interesting because that conference that I attended virtually a couple years ago, remember on Saturdays, it was about mm-hmm. the, I think it's called the Right Question Institute. And it's about asking questions so that, and teaching learners to ask questions so that they have agency.
Yeah.
And it definitely is about reading, but mm-hmm. definitely
no.
a question.
I just thought if you're a teacher or an educator
or a parent.
A parent, or if you're a parent,
grandparent.
Yeah. And then the other thing he talks about is an organizational lattice is an organizational chart that channels across levels and between teams. He does a whole bunch of talking about kind of like how I should be. It to me, it's the idea of everyone should be able to speak truth to power,
mm-hmm.
and nobody should be put down for bringing an idea kind of across.
Like, so the word, like so the ladder is top down, but the lattice is takes away those.
Well, when
those
you think
levels.
Of a lattice where plants grow,
yeah,
like it goes all directions, mm-hmm. right? And
yeah.
the vine grows everywhere and mm-hmm. crosses over and does all that stuff. He talks quite a bit about that, and just the last thing that I have about is. That every person should find themselves a credible believer and a guide who will always point you in the right or better direction.
Hmm.
So we've talked
like
about this
for a mentor.
Somewhat with our kids all the time,
yeah.
is who are the five people that influence you the most,
mm-hmm.
and to make sure that those people are actual credible believers. They're not just going to be nice, but they're going to be kind. And they believe in you, and they want you to be better all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would really encourage you to pick up Adam Grant's book, Hidden Potential, and give it a read.
And there's a lot of free learning opportunities as well from his blog and his newsletter.
Yeah, and he has a great website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Adam Grant, he's what I'm promoting today. So December 15th. There's a book I read. It's 60 Days to a Positive Mindset. It's just called The Power of a Positive Mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about some of the themes from that book.
I better get reading.
So thanks for joining us on November 30th. episode 101, for a little look at Adam Grant's Hidden Potential. Thanks for joining us on
No Room for Phonies. Good night.